Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on today's program, Katie Weaver tells a story about a cat that was on the run for 3 weeks in an airport. Faith Perlow answers a question from a listener about the difference between AM and PM. And we close by listening to The Outcasts of Poker Flat by Bret Hart. But first, the United States' ongoing labor shortage is bad for employers, but it also presents a chance for workers who often had a hard time finding jobs in better economic times, former prisoners. Special training programs in Mississippi and other states are now trying to fill some of the 11.3 million open jobs in the U.S. by hiring former inmates. Antonio McGowan was a prisoner at the Mississippi State Penitentiary. After serving 17 years, he was free for the first time since he was 15. But as an adult finally out of prison, he could only find low-paying jobs. McGowan needed stable work, but all he could find were temporary jobs. He cut grass 1 week and painted a house the next. He could not find full-time employment, and he found it hard to get a stable paycheck. Many of his bills started going unpaid. After several years, McGowan entered the Hinds County Reentry Program, a job training program in Mississippi for former inmates created in October. The practice of employing people with a criminal record is known as second chance hiring. In better economic times, many former prisoners faced serious difficulties in finding work. But the labor shortage created by the COVID-19 pandemic now presents them with opportunities, said Eric Beeman. He works for MagCorps, a company that provides job training to people in Mississippi prisons. Some studies have shown that stable jobs are a major factor in reducing recidivism. Recidivism is when someone returns to prison after being released. Still, not everyone is willing to hire a former prisoner. Stephanie Ferguson is an employment policy expert at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. She wrote in a May report that a lack of job opportunities for those with criminal records is hurting workforce participation in the economy. But the work shortage could create a change, and programs like Hinds County Reentry and MagCorps can help by training former prisoners to re-enter society. The programs also connect them with jobs that match their skills and interests. McGowan said he would like to work in air conditioning and heating repair. The program's workers recommended him to Upchurch Services, a Mississippi-based company that permits workers to take classes in repair services while getting experience in the job. McGowan was hired the second week of May. In addition to skills training, the workforce reentry programs can provide former inmates with mentors who can help them with life after prison. A mentor is someone who teaches or gives help to a less experienced person. Savannah Hayden was released from prison in November. Her mentor is Sinetra Freeman. Freeman is the founder of the Mississippi Center for Reentry. The organization offers work training programs to inmates preparing to leave prison. Freeman remembers going to an employment agency the day after she was released from prison. She said the agency told her she would never get a job because of her criminal record. Hayden thought she might work temporary jobs and try to make enough money. but Freeman told her to use her experience as a former inmate to help others re-entering society. Hayden now works for Freeman as the mental health and drug addiction coordinator at the Center for Reentry. After so many doors are slammed in your face, you get tired of asking, Hayden said. But there will be a person who says yes, and that will change your life.
A family's cat has finally been recovered after 3 weeks of being on the run in Boston's Logan International Airport. The cat, named Rowdy, had been successfully avoiding airport workers, airline employees, and animal experts since escaping from a pet container. Rowdy was finally caught Wednesday. Whether out of fatigue or hunger, we'll never know. But this morning, she finally let herself be caught, an airport spokesperson said. Rowdy is to be given a health examination and then returned to her family. I'm kind of in disbelief, said her owner, Patty Solly. I thought, what are the odds we're actually going to get her back? But I got a call this morning, and I am just so shocked. Rowdy's time on the lam began June 24th. Solly and her husband, Rich, returned to the United States from 15 years in Germany with the Army. When their Lufthansa Airlines flight landed, the 4-year-old black cat with green eyes escaped her cage. She was chasing some birds in the area. Soon, Rowdy herself was the object of a chase. Her escape set off a big search involving airport and Lufthansa workers. Construction workers and animal welfare experts got involved as well. They used wildlife cameras and safe release traps in an attempt to catch Rowdy. Many people saw Rowdy during her extended airport visit, but the cat always escaped those who chased her. Now, with Rowdy safely contained, a little calm has been returned to the airport. It was such a community effort, said Solly, adding, we're just so grateful to everyone who helped look for her. I'm Katie Weaver.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question from Max in China about the difference between AM and PM. Dear VOA teachers, this is Max from China. During a listening exam, I heard a saying like this. The incident happened on the 400 block of Rutland Road just after 12:30 p.m., and it was described as midnight. I'm confused. I think that 12:30 p.m. should be at noon during the day, and if I want to say the time of midnight, I think a.m. is correct. Which one is right? Thank you for helping me solve this problem. Best regards, Max. Dear Max, thank you for writing to us. You are correct. In the United States, we do not use a 24-hour clock in day-to-day speech. But some special fields that demand very clear communication use a 24-hour clock. So you might hear a person describe such time as military time. A 24-hour clock is more commonly used internationally than it is in America. We use a 12-hour clock and abbreviations from Latin to tell time. AM, antimeridian, meaning before midday, and PM, postmeridian, meaning after midday. Our morning clock starts at 12 a.m. That is 00 hours or midnight internationally. Morning or a.m. hours go until 12 p.m., which would also be 12 on an international 24-hour clock. But most of the time, we do not show a difference between the two forms of timekeeping in everyday speech. For example, we know that if a friend wants to meet at 2 local time, hopefully they do not want to meet at 2 in the morning. Let us look at a few examples to compare times. My supervisor planned the meeting for 3 p.m. This means that the meeting will take place at 3 in the afternoon. That new superhero movie is so long. It lasted until 1 a.m. This means that the movie did not finish until 1 in the morning, after midnight. I have an evening class from 4:30 p.m. until 7 p.m. This example means that the class continued from the afternoon into the evening. Now consider a clock for comparison. If you are reading online, we have a clock to help us understand the differences between the 24-hour clock and the 12-hour clock. The clock is at 10:10. If it is the morning, we would say it as 10:10 a.m. This would be the same internationally. But if it were before midnight, we would read it as 10:10 p.m. or 22:10 on a 24-hour clock. A fun way to remember a.m. and p.m. is to listen to the song A.M. to P.M. by singer Christina Milian. The lyrics go, somebody hit the lights so we can rock it day and night. People need to tell that's right from AM to PM. In the song, the party is starting in the early hours of the morning, after midnight, in the AM. And the party is so long that it goes into the afternoon, or the PM hours. Please let us know if these examples and explanations have helped you, Max. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Now, an American story from the Voice of America. We present The Outcasts of Poker Flat by Bret Hart. Here is Jim Tedder.
John Oakhurst was a gambler. He had lived in the small western town of Poker Flat for only a short time. He had defeated many people at cards. He had also won a lot of their money. For that reason alone, he was not well liked. On the morning of November 23rd, 1850, he saw some men talking as he walked down the main street of the town. As he came near, they got quiet. He said to himself, I guess they're talking about me, and that can't be good. Oakhurst was right. Some of the town's leaders had met secretly and decided to force some people to leave. They thought Poker Flat would be a better place to live if those people were gone. Besides Oakhurst, two women of low morals were led to the edge of town. They were the Duchess, as she was called, and Mother Shipton. A man called Uncle Billy was added to the group. He was known to drink too much. Some people thought that he had also stolen some gold. They had no proof, but that did not matter. Uncle Billy was just no good, and he had to go. The outcasts were told that if they ever came back, they would be killed. So the four of them slowly rode out of town. The Duchess cried and said she would probably die on the road. Mother Shipton and Uncle Billy cursed.
Damn it.
Mother said she would like to cut the heart out of the people who had done this to them. But John Oakhurst rode in silence. He thought all of life was a gamble. He had just run into some bad luck. That was all. The outcasts were headed for Sandy Bar, a camp not too far away. But it was high up in the cold Sierra Mountains, and the path was anything but smooth. Around noon, Mother Shipton became so tired, she fell off her horse. She said that was as far as she was going today. Oakhurst tried to make them move on because they had no food or fuel. But the three would not listen. Instead, they began to drink alcohol that Uncle Billy had hidden. Soon, they were quiet and asleep. Oakhurst did not drink. He stood nearby and watched them. He began to think about his life and about how lonely he was. Yet he was stronger than his three companions. He could have left them there and set off alone, but he did not. Then he heard someone call,
"Yo! John! John Oakhurst!"
A young man named Tom Simpson came riding up. The gambler knew Tom. They had once played cards, and Oakhurst had won. But after the game, he told young Tom that he was too easy to beat, and he gave him back his money. Tom said Oakhurst would be his friend for life. Tom was not alone. From behind a tree came his new wife, a girl named piney woods. Her father had not wanted her to marry Tom, so they had run away. Tom told Oakhurst that he had a little food. He also showed him an old log house just off the path. Years of harsh weather had nearly ruined it. But it was all they had, and it would have to do. The women could spend the night in there. The men would make a fire and sleep on the ground by the door. The night seemed to pass quickly, but the weather became colder. The wind increased, and it began to snow. Oakhurst had a bad feeling. He turned to where Uncle Billy had slept and found him gone. He had left the others and even taken their horses. Oakhurst said Uncle Billy had probably gone for help, but he knew better. The group of five decided to wait for the snow to stop before traveling farther. They no longer had horses. From here on, they would be on foot. By the third day out from Poker Flat, the snow had gotten deep. They could no longer see the path. Food was running low. Everything around them was white and cold. 1 week later, they still had not moved. The snow was deeper than ever, and it continued to fall. It formed a prison they could not escape. Still, they could see smoke rising from the warm fires in the houses down below in Poker Flat. The sight seemed especially cruel. But the little group of outcasts tried to keep up their spirits. They tried to stay as warm as they could. They sat together by their own open-air fire, and Tom Simpson pulled out a small accordion from his pack. Piney Woods played the instrument. They all sang songs. The music took on a defiant quality, a quality of resistance. But the outcasts had to listen to the sad cries of their mostly empty stomachs. The hunger got worse with each passing day. At midnight on the 10th day, Mother Shipton called Oakhurst to her side. She said, "Give this to the young ones." In a bag was all her food. She had not eaten for days. She had saved the food for the others. She turned quietly to the wall of the log house and died. John Oakhurst began to think that none of them would live out the storm. He gave Tom Simpson a pair of snowshoes and asked him to try to walk back to Poker Flat for help. He guessed it would take Tom at least 2 days, if not more, to get there. Tom kissed his new bride and left on foot. Soon, he was out of sight. The Duchess and Piney were surprised and frightened when Oakhurst also turned to leave. "You're not going too," they cried. He said, "Only a little way. I need to find us some help." At that time of year, daylight did not last long. When night came, Oakhurst had not returned. The two women were too hungry, weak, and cold to even add more wood to the fire. They passed the stormy night holding each other close. And that is the way they were found the next morning when help arrived from Poker Flat. They had frozen to death during the night. The rescuers from town said that they had been right to force the outcasts to leave Poker Flat. But they never thought the punishment would end up like this. Justice was one thing, but freezing people to death was not their aim. And then they thought of the gambler. Where was he? What had happened to him? They searched as best they could. And then they found him. Under a tall tree, a playing card was stuck into the wood by a knife. On the card was written, "Beneath this tree lies the body of John Oakhurst, who had some bad luck starting the 23rd of November, 1850. He handed in his cards on the 7th of December, the same year. Oakhurst sat there, cold and still. They said he looked peaceful. A single bullet from a small handgun nearby had ended his life. John Oakhurst had been both the strongest and the weakest of the outcasts of Poker Flat.
You have been listening to An American Story on the Voice of America. The Outcasts of Poker Flat by Bret Harte was adapted and read by Jim Tedder. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.